Welcome, everyone, to the Walt Weekly Podcast with your host, Walter Wakeman Sr., and co-host, Michelle Sweeney McCombs. The Walt Weekly is brought to you by Michelle Sweeney Hair and Skincare. Contributors for the Walt Weekly show are Colette Harris out of North Carolina, and a major contributor to the Walt Weekly, Dina Ramsey, from North Carolina. Today's topic, what is going on in this country? Back to you, Walter.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. Yeah, there's a lot going on. I don't know whether we're in a twilight zone. I don't know what we could compare this to, you know, metaphorically. But there's a lot going on. It's very, very strange. And I don't think, you know, I know we've never been through something like this before. But let's break it down. You know, I want to start with Roe v. Wade. You know, and I want to try to solicit your take on the reversal or the strike down by the Supreme Court of Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary for this country to be able to reverse something like this that has been in place for over 50 years. It's scary because not just the reason behind Roe v. Wade, just the way politics are, how they can just change a law that has been in place for so long and reverse it. It makes you wonder what other laws are they going to change in reference to the people, how we're living, what we're doing, our lifestyles, our privacy, our rights. You know, this has a lot to do with a lot of different categories, a lot of different scenarios for individual people. And not just for Roe v. Wade, you know, you have a race thing in here as well. So I'm not too happy with it. And I kind of feel like this is just the beginning of other reversals of laws that have been placed.
Yeah, like gay marriage is one that may be at the top of the list.
And our rights and our civil rights, you know, which is still pending. We're still not where we need to be equally. So our civil rights, our voting rights can also be amended. Our constitutional rights can also be amended. If it's that easy to reverse something that has always been in place, and why was that reversed? We need to talk about that.
Well, you know, the thing is, I was looking at Roe v. Wade as a nexus to replacement, the great replacement theory that a lot of the conservatives, the far-right conservatives have been talking about, that they're being replaced in terms of being a majority in this country. And the abortion was one of the things that they mentioned, because they're saying that, you know, they're losing 60%, you know, by abortions, even though abortions, you know, the African American worse than it does the white person. But the whites cannot afford to be losing numbers, because it was projected that by 2050, and it may be sooner, that they will be the minority in this country. So it all plays into that, which I like to call the main line, the main cable running under everything. On the conservative side is that they think they are going to lose the majority.
I mean, this goes back to the 40s and 50s, or prior to that, where you couldn't have interracial marriages. They thought that back then, over 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Virginia had their first interracial marriage. So that's, you know, when it all started. When they felt like, you know, their race would be non-existent. If you keep, mixing the races, there's nothing, you know, there'd be no such thing as a complete white race, white people. Because you have, I mean, even, it's stupid anyway, because no one is 100% pure anyway.
No,
they're not pure. You know, they weren't the first ones here. Right. So if you want to go back to beginning of time, you know, Africa is where everyone's from.
Well, they've been working very hard to dispel that. You know that, right? Mm-hmm. They come from Europe. You know, the first man came out of Europe, but it couldn't have been froze to death because it didn't have clothes.
Right.
You know, it's that way, you know. I look at it like, for instance, you know, white people, they're saying that, you know, they're right now, they're 60% or maybe 55% of mm-hmm. the population. Yes. And they're slowly going to get under that. And that is one of their most basic fears, is that they will lose control. So I can understand how the Indians felt then. I mean, they see themselves as a Native American.
Right.
That once they lose, you know, the majority, they will win no more elections. I mean, they will be powerless. But I don't, you know, I think that's irrational, you know. I think that would ease a lot of the racial tensions and, you know, racism and this and that, because we all be brown, basically. That's what they see in the future, the brown people. And they also
think it's a fear of a black nation.
A minority, yes, a non-white nation. I mean, that's the underlying fear. That runs everything. Everything springs from that. A lot of their rhetoric and a lot of their claims, especially about the elections and all this kind of stuff, is their fear that they will be outnumbered. So in that sense, you know, they can't win electoral seats. I mean, you know, they can't win elections. So they're fighting very hard at the state level to try to reverse some of the gains in the Voting Rights Act. So. Right. They're all over the place trying to stop this. And it's not just the white supremacists. These are Republicans.
Right.
You know, yeah.
That's something. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's how they've always thought, you know, anyway. You know, I don't think that the train of thought has changed at all. They're still stuck, you know, that's where you get back into make America great again, which means make America white again. It's that control, you know.
Absolutely.
It's definitely control. It's narcissistic. And, you know, to me, it's one race. It's a human race, you know. We are just beautiful people of different colors, different nationalities. But we all bleed the same, right?
That's right.
We all have the same organs. We don't have anything different other than our exterior, which is the color or your ethnicity. Right. So we are all the same. So, you know, categorizing people that way is just a horrible situation. You know, it's a horrible thing to be a human being in this world and you categorize according to your color, which is basically it. Because you could be, you know, I could be a black person from France or another country anywhere, but my color, the color of my skin, does not make me French, you know what I mean? Even though if I was born there. So, you know, even coming here to the United States, you can be white, but you don't know what that person's heritage is, right? They could be from, you know, Iran, they could be from somewhere, but they have a white complexion. And you never know. So you're putting people in categories that you really don't even know what their background is. You know, I had a colleague that I used to work with. She was white in the industry. I had no idea she was from Sudan. Mm-hmm. But she was a whiter version of in her family. And some of her family members were darker. So you know, you judge people by their color, but you really don't know. Most of them are not pure white. What is pure white? Anyway, what is that?
Well, you got these white supremacists talking about, you know, an attack on their DNA. Mm-hmm. All right, so pure white got to be just primarily your genes are European. That is my definition of pure
white. European? Wow.
European, you know.
Wow. Europeans are not 100% white, so I don't even know why that's
categorized. But why would you say that, though? Why would you say they're not 100% white?
I mean, I know.
Nobody's 100% white in terms of you know, the way they are. But I'm saying, you know, some from Paris, I mean, France, excuse mm-hmm. me, you know, some from Western Europe, Eastern Europe, you know,
Okay, gotcha.
You know, you got the Anglo-Saxons, you got the, mm-hmm. and there's another term. That's the way they're split, you know, but they're Anglo-Saxon. What constitutes an mm-hmm. Anglo-Saxon? Okay, that's why they call Anglos.
Okay.
So, gotcha. Caucasian, the Caucasus. You had the Caucasus, mm-hmm. you got people from the Caucasus, and you had the people
right.
You know, and so, you know, we can go in and out of that and do research, but that's not what this show is about, right?
Mm-hmm. We're
about the big issues of the day that have overshadowed our way of life.
Right.
I mean, to a great extent, you know, I mean, moving beyond Roe v. Wade, you know, we can talk about the white supremacists because they're taking it to a whole new level.
A civil war.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's why I said it's very scary. These laws is just not Roe v. Wade. It's a lot of things. It's very political. You know, we have our ex-president that initiated all of this, right? So, you know, he just brought out things that people were already thinking, right?
There you go.
That they couldn't say in, you know, they did say in public, but, you know, he brought back the Karens that we used to have. And then, you know, right after slavery was over, you had these white people reporting us. If we looked them at them in the eyes, or if we spoke when we weren't spoken to, or if we were out of place, or we drank from a fountain we weren't supposed to drink from. Those were Karens back then, you know? So it's a repeat, you know, history repeats itself. So he brought all of those feelings out that you have these racist white people that you either work with, you know, you can know them personally, but you don't know them 100% until, you know, they're put in a certain situation. And that's when you're like, oh, you've been a racist all of this time I've known you. I had a situation like that. And she, you know, it was a female, and, you know, from the islands, but part of her island was divided, right? And the light skin and the dark skin, you know, they didn't, right? Okay, so you have discrimination there against your own kind as well, right? So, you know, something came up with Trump during Trump's reelection, and it was on Facebook. I had posted something, and she posted something that I would have never expected to come out of her mouth. And that's when I, you know, everyone started responding after that. And that's when I really knew, I said, wow, I knew this girl for so long. I didn't even know who she was, you know, what she represented until something like that came up. So you really don't know people until something happens or they have an opinion of it. And you see, they're different from me. But I can't really, you know, be mad at her. It's just, I've never seen her in that position before. But now I see you are not true to your culture. You're not true to your culture. You discriminate amongst your own culture. You discriminate within your culture, and you also think like the white people. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, who are they going to pick? You're still black. So if anything happens, the white people are not going to pick you to be on their side because you still are a person of color. But you think like a white person, like you're privileged, or you're better than this person. And a lot of black people that think like that too, because you do have your
I was going to say the fair skin versus the dark skin, right.
They think they're privileged, but at the end of the day, if you get pulled over by a cop or a bad cop, put it that way, you're still the N-word to them.
You
might think you're lighter and you have one up on us, but you are still a person of color. So you have a lot of people in politics like that as well. A lot of people that think like that. But like I said, going back to the ex-president, he initiated all of that racism and hatred into people. And when you light a fire like that, oh boy, how do you reverse that?
I don't see a way, especially with the Supreme Court.
You cannot reverse that because, once these people are out, and you see who they, I mean, people have lost their jobs. They have, when Michelle Obama, President Obama was in office, they called her a monkey. I mean, it was just so many people coming out and didn't care because, you know, social media kill you. You know, that could break you. You got to be careful of what you say, who you say it about. You know, you have to be, you know, you have to choose your words or they can turn into something explosive.
Or to be out there forever in the ether, right?
And Trump's words, the ex-president's words, lit a fire. He added fuel to that fire.
But that was boiling.
It took off. That was boiling for a long time. They were just waiting for an opportunity. waiting for a leader. Opportunity.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Waiting for a leader. And at the end of the day, that leader is going to go about his business and all these other people are going to take a fall for it. You know, which is stupid because I'm like, why are they, even with the insurrection court proceedings now, you know, all of these
January 6th committee, yeah,
they're seeing, you know, he left you out for the wolves. Some of them are turning. but is it really going to be relevant now, right? Is it really going to help put this man in prison?
Well, I look at it like this. He's going to. Hopefully, I mean, I don't care whether he's a Republican, you know, we can't go Republican, you know, from my standpoint, is to do everything to block the Republican code. The Republicans have gone off the reservation. Mm-hmm. You know, they used to be a party of, you know, fiscal responsibility. They were moderate, you know, like a George Bush Republican, you know what I mean? You didn't like him, but, you know,
right.
You don't have to, you know, be looking over your shoulder or be on the defensive, you know, because you don't know where this guy's going to come
right.
from.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, but those Republicans, you know, they have gone to the other side because they're afraid to lose their districts. And what supports those Republicans are their voters.
Yes.
You know, and their voters. They represent their voters. So the voters like it. So basically it's drilling down to their populace within their district.
Yeah, you know, the scary part. Yes, the scary part with the ex-president is that he was the only one in the world that had the most following. That's scary.
He had
followers on Twitter. Like, he had a huge following. So that's scary to know that there's a lot of people out there that think like him. That's scary.
More than one third of the people think like him in this country.
Yeah.
You know, so you're looking at 33% of over 300 million. I mean, how much are you talking about?
That's a lot.
60-some million people, right?
That's a lot of numbers. Yeah, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people that think like that. And every day you got to deal with someone either disrespecting you or looking at you funny because they just feel like, you know, you come in their store, you're going to steal, you're only here for this, that, and other. You know, they judge you by the way you look. Never judge a book by its cover. Because you never know what that person is or who they are or who they represent or what, you know, what they know, you know, who they know. So it's just a tough time. These are really tough times. I mean, you know, we had worse times. Civil rights was the worst, you know. There's nothing compared to that. Nothing compared to slavery. Nothing compares to that, but you would think after 50-something years, almost 60 years, that we, you know, civil rights is still does not exist 100%. We do not have the same rights as white people. We don't. People of color have had it rough here. You know, the United States has treated us like shit. When does it change? When, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's tough because it's not going to get any better because you have these white supremacists. But I mean, now that they're arresting these guys from the insurrection, January 6th, they're making examples out. They have to because this country would turn over. People would lose their minds if these people are not convicted. I mean, they've already got, you know, the head of the white supremacy, right? They got a couple of them.
Yeah, for the Proud Boys.
Like, how much, right, the Proud Boys, how much evidence do you need? Why do you have to waste taxpayers' money? You have these people on film. Why do you need to have, you know, these major hearings, and why did it take a year and a half later to happen? You already had the evidence. You know, how much investigations do you need to get the proof? And then you have people that are testifying or have given testimonies prior to the proceedings. Because some of them didn't even know what was going on. They were there, but they didn't realize, oh my God, what did I get myself into? You know, you had maybe one or two out of 10, right? That have said that. You know, I think the young lady that they did videotape and they showed her her testimony during the court proceedings. And, you know, she blatantly said, Trump said this, Trump said that. She did not know. You know, until the day of when things were happening, what was going on. They kept certain things from certain people just to get them to go, right? So you could get a crowd to go. So, a lot, you know, once that happened, I mean, the bulk of them, the 90% of them, 95% of them knew what they were doing. The 5% didn't know. So, and those are the people that are speaking out. Or the ones that are speaking more are the ones that don't want to get as much time because they're testifying against them, which is crazy. So now you're looking for sympathy, so you don't get that much time. But you're going to jail. You were there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We waiting on the Justice Department, though, to get their act together. You know, but you know what I'm so curious about, and this is something that we accuse a lot. When I say we, I'm talking about the U.S. is accused, mm-hmm. you know, people around the world of barbarism and of being uncivilized. I look at, you know, these recent shootings, which we're going to do another show around the shootings, and you know, and drill down a little bit more and get a little bit more granular into it. But I do want to say is that, you know, with Buffalo and Uvalde, in Buffalo you had old women, old church ladies, that this teenager shot, all right? Mm-hmm. And then in Uvalde you had our young people, elementary school, 7, 8, 9 years old, that this kid shot. So why are you going at the defenseless?
Right. And the parade in Chicago. You're going for the defenseless people. Why are you shooting? If you have an issue, a lot of these situations are mental illness. That's at least what they're calling it.
It's no damn mental illness. That's just evil.
And they love to call it that way. That's just evil.
Quick.
And what annoys me the most is that the family members know this. Family members, that grandmother or that mother knows that this person has an issue. They know that this person is hateful. They know this person has these weapons. Why do you enable these people?
Yeah, why?
Why? And then look what happens. And then you're sorry. You regret it. Or you get shot. The child shoots you before he leaves out the house. Oh, he's a good boy. He's this, he's that. No, he wasn't a good boy.
That's because you don't know your kids. Yeah. Why attack a 7-year-old, shoot him, get cold blood? I mean, if white supremacists really look at it, and I've always thought of this when it comes to it, is that they're cowards. They're not one-on-one. They will not fight you one-on-one. They got to have all these heavy weapons, you know, the AK-47s and, you know, the automatic, you know, the semi-automatic guns and, I mean, weapons that you wouldn't use for hunting. All right, because you destroy your prey. You know, you can't eat it. I mean, you hunt to eat, right? I mean, I don't understand why, and I do understand soft targets. You know, if you go have a soft target, you know, from a point of view of a sniper or someone that wants it, a terrorist, but, you know, a soft target to be like, you know, indiscriminate. You know, you like the library. You know, you go to the library. But you deliberately go into school.
Innocent, defenseless.
And little kids. Right. Little kids, though. But really, what does it take for you to sit there and shoot a 7-year-old? Just blow them apart. Because they said some of the bodies were wounds that you would only see on the war field.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
All right? I mean, just explode the body of a little 7-year-old, 6-year-old, 8-year-old child.
It's horrible, horrible. What kind of mind
can you do that?
To do that? Yeah, how can you do that? Yeah.
I don't see anybody jumping up there saying how barbaric. I mean, when they cut the head off, when ISIS cut the head off of a white journalist, they were saying how barbaric that is. They were saying, but nothing can be more barbaric than what they did to these kids and these old ladies.
And it's a repeat, Sandy Hook, you know.
And Sandy
they
Hook,
learn
yes.
From there. They didn't learn from there, yeah.
Yeah. Why are they going after the young, I mean, indefensible?
Taking their lives. You know, taking their lives and not caring. These kids have not even lived yet. They're babies. What you know, harmless. What was the purpose of that? What did this school or these children do to you that you had to take out whatever frustrations you have out on them?
Yeah. And like you said, you know, why automatically they're mentally ill? What about the guy that bombed the subway, that was in the subway and set off a bomb?
Right.
All right, first thing they charge him with is civil rights, breaking civil rights laws, and stuff like that.
He's a terrorist.
I mean, they didn't say, oh, he's mentally ill. The guy was mentally ill.
Right.
But what was the first thing come out? Oh, we're going to charge him with, you know, civil rights law, you know, the federal government's going to charge him. They didn't mention much about no mental illness. And the guy, you can look at him and tell he was crazy.
Wow.
But they didn't do that because he was black.
That's all true. Right?
Anybody should be
That's crazy. True. That's black. True. The white terrorists are out there and they're mental illness. That's the first thing they say.
That's the first thing they say. Even though he wrote all on these social media. I mean, you're not mentally ill when you can spell out in detail what your plans are and, you know, and what your actions are going to be and how you're going to go about
right.
it.
Right.
I mean, the guy that did you bound there or the guy that did Buffalo, one of the two, he had followers. He had views on social media.
So he had an audience knowing.
He had an audience.
Yeah. And that when you have supporters like that, that's edging you on to, you know, to complete your task. Whatever your task is, you're going to complete it because you have these people agreeing with you, saying that you're right.
That's what I'm saying. You got plenty of them out there that you know.
That's what made Trump so popular because he has so many people agreeing with him.
Because it's in them. You know what I mean? It's in them. So he brought it out. It was in them. They've been conducting themselves that way for a long time. We both know it because... Even though we live in the North, we're in what I think is the greatest city on earth.
Yes.
We still run into it every day.
We do. You're going to have it in certain areas. You will. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter where you're at. People are everywhere. So you're going to bump into one or two every now and then. You know, how you deal with it, how you control that situation, and how you react to it. So, you know, it's just a lot. It's a lot. When you're in a bigger city, is not as bad, you know, because it's wide, it's spread out. You have it, but people are a little more private about it, or how I should say, discreet when you're in the bigger city.
Because yeah.
You don't know if that person is the same mentality you are, you know. They could be the same person and react worse than you reacting to them. So you don't know what you're going to get in New York City.
That's true. I mean, believe it or not, when I was coming up here for the first time on the bus, and I got my first, the first thing that hit me on the way to New York was, how can I tell the racists from the non-racists? Because coming from North Carolina, you knew who didn't like you.
Right.
You knew white people. Yeah. You knew it.
Yeah.
You know, it was up front and personal, you know, right up front. I don't like
right.
niggers.
Right.
It's scary. I'm using
tell you,
the
yeah, but they tell you.
Yeah, they South, tell you. I don't like
the South was brutal and it was open and they didn't hide it. You know,
and we lived with that because we understood.
That's how this country was built on racism.
Exactly. And we didn't tell them.
Violence. Yeah.
And we say, cracker, we don't like you either.
Right.
We come right back at them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we lived without them.
Right.
We lived, you know, that's the way we carried ourselves. That's why we had such excellence.
Mm-hmm.
In our communities.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. My mother said the same thing. She said it was better. Segregation was better for them. She had
exactly.
great education. They, you know, they knew not to be in their town after 7 o'clock. They, you know, they be home in their communities doing, you know, educating themselves.
That's right.
Them, their own businesses.
That's right.
My mother said
That's
they would never really go into town unless they had to. You know,
that's
they
right.
didn't do. You know, they didn't patronize the white people. They had their own.
Yeah, Friday so night we get out of football game. That's
yeah,
it.
Sometimes you know, segregation was best in certain situations.
Segregation is the killer of our. To me, yeah, you know my thoughts on mm-hmm. you know integration and the desegregation. It killed us as a race. It hurt us badly.
Right.
It was like a harpoon in the side, under the heart, because it broke up the family unit. But then
yeah.
again, I don't want to get so far off topic that, you know, we got a lot of shows we want to do, a lot of things that we want to do around these topics. And so I don't want to try to do everything in one show. I think we want to drill down more in our next show to, you know, these shootings and the mindset of these so-called mentally unstable people, you know, that they hide behind. You know, he's mentally unstable. He's crazy. You know, I used to tell people, man, I'll kill you. And I'm joking now. But all I got to do is pull out my mental illness card and I can kill you.
Right, right.
Let's go to the hospital. Right. You know, that's basically what they're doing.
Right, right. You know? I think, you know, this is like a war within our own country, right, in our own communities. It's not it's mass shooting, but we also have culturalized shootings as well, locally. So, you know, the local shootings are like an offset of, you know, the mass shooting, right? So what's the difference?
Well, I don't see the correlation in a sense. And, you know, that's why that next show, I think that we should look at both sides of that issue. Because I'm inclined to disagree, because it's a hard thing being a black man in this country. And I'm going to leave it at that. Growing up black, a black man and a black woman, and a black man especially. You know, I don't want to put emphasis on a black man that much, but you got to be damn crazy by the time you get 21.
Oh, yeah.
You know, being a black man in this country. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. It's so tough. It's
yeah, easy. That's what I'm saying. That's
it's
what
not
I'm saying.
Easy, you know, it's not easy, you know. I think I wish we could get like a young adult and, you know, different age groups of men to come on just to speak about it, because you need different sides of it.
You do.
You need different sides, different experiences, different views of it.
Yeah. And we want average folks. We want average folks. They don't have to be a celebrity. You know, we're not looking for big time politicians, because all this stuff going on, what are the politicians doing?
Not
you know what I mean? Look at it down. Look at the Bronx. I mean, hey, we're close. We're close to that borough. We're very, very close. And Walt Weekly is very, very close to the Bronx. Okay.
Definitely.
But, you know, we got all the killing and stuff going on. You know, we got to do something. What can be done? What's the solution? You know, we strand off, but, you know, we just want to get that 2 cents worth in there, because people, we want to talk about it. Michelle and I want to talk about it and get into it, you know, from the perspective of being on the ground and people that know and have been affected by all of this nonsense that's ongoing. You know, Eric Adams, you know, mayor, you know, I see him out there every damn day. You know, he's on everything. I mean, he can't do everything, you know.
Thank you for listening to the Walt Weekly Podcast with your host, Walter Latham Sr., and co-host Michelle Sweeney McCombs. The Walt Weekly is brought to you by Michelle Sweeney Hair and Skincare. Major contributors, Clarette Harris and Dina Ramsey from North Carolina. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Walt Weekly, Twitter at Walt Weekly, Podbean, The Walt Weekly, and www.thewaltweekly.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and other streaming platforms.